Welcome, everyone, to the Interpreter Foundation podcast. For this episode, my name is Terry Hutchinson, one of your co-hosts, and my other co-hosts are Kevin Christensen and Mark Johnson. Our discussion topic for this podcast is going to be a review of General Conference, and the General Conference was held October 4th and 5th of 2025. We are recording this October 7th, shortly after the funeral for President Russell M. Nelson. And we'll be talking about all of those things during this episode. The mission of the Interpreter Foundation is to support the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints through faithful scholarship. We make the latest and best scholarship available to you in podcasts, journal articles, books, seminars, films, and scripture roundtables. And we invite you to see what the Interpreter has to offer at interpreterfoundation.org. Other than the books, it is all free. And so if you like this podcast, you find some of our topics interesting, please tell your friends about it. Have them go to the website, interpreterfoundation.org. You can give us a good rating. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcast app for this podcast, especially if you like it. Because the Interpreter Foundation is not owned or controlled by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the comments we make are solely our responsibility. And now our discussion topic is a General Conference review. So, as was pointed out at the beginning of General Conference, it's been 75 years since we had a prophet pass away this soon before General Conference. And I have to confess, in my mind, I had some studying of the ark that was going on. As we've talked about, my mission companion works for public affairs, and he's actually around, and he was in England when President Nelson passed away. And so I wondered if he had any input on what was going to happen, timelines, things like that, because I really hoped that they would do his funeral as the first session of General Conference. Now, maybe everybody, you know, I mean, obviously there's some pros and cons to that, and we could dive into the weeds and speculate on it. But my reasoning behind it, in my limited scope, of course, of studying, was to give the widest possible audience to learn about President Nelson and to hear his messages and to be taught the doctrines in a way that I think would have brought even more people together than normal, than maybe even happened today. I would have liked to see some of his friends, like the guy from the NAACP, some of his non-LDS friends, be able to speak too, because there have been precedents where, you know, non-members have spoken from General Conference pulpit. Obviously, that didn't happen. My second hope, of course, was that maybe they would do the solemn assembly where they reorganized the first presidency and, you know, call a new apostle before they did the funeral if they didn't do that. And my friend told me he would buy me a lifetime supply of Cafe Rio if they did that.
Wow.
So, you know, I think there's a thing where we can turn even the most sacred and solemn experiences sometimes to just, you know, friendship and bantering, kind of like we do here. You know, they didn't do those things. But the thing that stood out for me most in this General Conference was it was done under the direction of the 12. And I really appreciated the fact that President Oaks, as the president of the 12, led the conference. They just continued the conference without missing a beat. There was only one vacancy, and that was where President Oaks would have spoken, but wound up giving his talk in lieu of President Nelson's at the end. So one of the sessions ended a bit early, but all of the apostles were referred to in their seniority and in their capacity as apostles not as members of the First Presidency, which is exactly what we've been talking about here in our Come Follow Me as we study the Doctrine and Covenants and know that when the prophet dies, the First Presidency is dissolved and the other members take their place in the quorum, and in some instances in the past, out of the quorum. So it just, for me, it ties in with something else that we'll touch on a little later when I talk about President Nelson's impact on the church. But for me, that was one of the things that really stood out for this conference was the management, the conduct of it under the direction of the 12 as a unified quorum. I just felt that so strongly, and it reaffirmed to me that succession that happened way back in 1844.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good point, Terry. And I felt the same thing with the 12 conducting. There was no panicking. There was no, rushing to get things done, which maybe, that's what your friend, would have been, talking about when he bet you that Cafe Rio. There was none of that. There was no need to panic. It was just business as usual. The system's in place. And meanwhile, we're enjoying this apostolic interregnum, I believe is the word there. Am I pronouncing that right? I think so.
We're not asking you to spell it.
That's good. Spelling is not my forte. And I am also not mighty in speaking like I am in writing. And if you've read my papers, you already know that's pretty bad. So we're just lucky to. Okay, oh, never mind.
If it gets through the interpreter system, Mark, it's not bad.
That's fair. Okay. One of the things that Elder Oaks mentioned about that apostolic interregnum was he said it was been 75 years since, some 75 years. And I looked it up. It was when George Albert Smith passed away and David O. McKay was put in as the next prophet. This was in 1851. Terry, you probably remember that a lot better than I do.
Well, actually, it was 1951. I wasn't born.
1951. Yes.
I don't even know if Kevin was born.
I was born in 54, so I grew up with President McKay being always there.
Oh yeah, I mean, President McKay was there till I was about 10 years old, and then we had a series, and then but President Kimball was really the prophet for my youth and my mission.
Yeah.
Sounds right. Yeah, he was Kimball was my prophet too for a very long time when I was a kid. Anyway, so and I as I was looking up the these time frames of when they passed, it kind of works out to an average of about 5 to 7 days from when one prophet had passed away to when they reorganized the first presidency. So
Well,
if they follow
that's in the 1900s, right?
in huh?
That's
No,
in the
this
1900s.
This is since like John Taylor and Lorenzo Snow, rather, and Joseph F. Smith. It's
That's what I
been
mean.
about a week, yeah. The first presidents of the church, there have been a few years since they've, one prophet had passed away and they reorganized the presidency. But yeah, ever since Lorenzo Snow and his time, it's been about a week. They haven't really waited that long. So if they follow suit, we could know pretty soon.
Well, in the last episode that we were together, we recorded an interview with Reed Nielsen about this his book on the Salt Lake Temple, and
Yes.
Oxford University let him tell that story. That's the very story. What you're talking about with Lorenzo Snow was the very story where he was in the Salt Lake Temple and the Savior appeared to him to let him know to reorganize immediately, to not wait, as had happened with all of the previous presidents. They'd waited a period of time, the longest, I think, being Brigham Young between 1844 and 1846 or seven.
Yeah.
But they still had a long period of time. And this starts the point you're just making about 5 days on average. I know that it was 12 days between President Monson and President Nelson.
But that's still, in comparison, not a lot of time. So, Terry, you still got time to get your call into Vegas.
I wouldn't dare bet on that.
Yeah.
That's good. Me neither.
I mean, I don't bet, but that's definitely one I wouldn't do.
Yeah.
That
One thing I got out of watching this conference that's very strong is when in the New Testament it says, "By this shall you know they are my disciples, that they have love one for another." And it's quite clear that everyone that was participating had love for one another and for President Nelson. And it's, you know, in the way that in the respect and care that they showed, and the love and concern that they gave, and the kind of messaging that, you know, each speaker gave, was that there was this sense that we're going to miss President Nelson, but it was, you know, sad to see him go, but it wasn't a tragedy, you know, that, you know, we'll miss him and we mourn for him because we lose him, but there's that sense that our faith tells us that you know, life will continue into the eternities, and that he's lived a good life, and that this church has been organized in such a way that it just keeps on moving with these through these experiences. And we, you know, watch the people that have been there, and look at President Oaks, and feel his spirit, and, you know, just start praying for him and for when the mantle fully falls upon him. And we feel like that this is just going to keep going. I said I grew up with President McKay, and I think I can remember when I used to know every single temple, and it was easy to know the list of the, you know, where the temples were. And you just kind of think, yeah, there's, you know, the temples in Utah, and there's Alberta, and there's Arizona, and there's Hawaii, and there's England, and not much out
Switzerland.
on Switzerland.
Switzerland. Yeah.
Yeah. But so for a long time, that was it.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, it's not only do they announce more temples each conference, but they typically and now announce more temples than we used to have altogether when I grew up. So it's the growth of the church is extraordinary. And that's another thing that shows up in the conference, is just seeing the diverse cultural backgrounds of some of these speakers, and how all of them are just, at this point, we kind of take it for granted, you know, when they get up to speak and we listen to their messages. And realize, yeah, that we are, whereas when I grew up, it was, you know, basically, it was mostly a Utah church. I think there
Yeah.
was more, I think there are still more LDS in Utah than even in California, let alone, you know, some of the other Mountain West states. But now, you know, they're, you know, we're literally everywhere. And we see these people coming in and listen to these stories of devotion, and these speakers. Men and women, which is also great, you know, the number, and just feeling like this has really changed since I was a kid, you know, in the sense that the gospel's still the same, but the growth of the church has been something extraordinary. And then here in us, in the church, that, you know, we just set records for convert baptism. In my word in that we left in near Pittsburgh, you know, we had like five or six baptisms last year. You know, that it just, when so many churches are losing membership,
Well,
and
those figures were astounding.
yeah.
300,000 a year for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
So, in other words, 5% of all the members of the church have joined in the last 3 years.
Well,
And
I can remember when the church reached 1 million. That was in my lifetime.
yeah,
To baptize almost 1 million in 3 years, yeah, that's extraordinary.
yeah. Well, and then to see the statistics in some of these other places,
Yeah.
20% in Africa, Latin
Yeah.
America, Europe, which surprised me that they were included, and Asia, and then 17% in North America.
Yeah.
I'm just and then to hear, and I think it was Elder Godoy, talk about the saints in Africa and the growth that they have, the meeting places. There's a branch that overwhelms its rented building, and so they have two sacrament meetings.
That's great. Yeah.
I mean, just those stories of that, and hearing about it and seeing it, and it's just mind-boggling that it is an evidence that, in addition to the certainly the challenges we face, see the with the challenges of secularism and the internet and, the stresses on the family and other things. But then to see the gathering increase as well is just a very marvelous thing to witness. And it became apparent a little more in this conference. Mark, what was something else about this conference that really brought to your mind?
Okay, first of all, the flippant one, because I have to tell a flippant thing because that's my style. We had two Elder Johnsons speak during this conference, and then
And none of them was you.
none of them was me, thank heavens. And then Sister Camille Johnson gave the closing prayer, I believe the last Sunday afternoon session. So go Johnson, as I said during that the conference.
Descendants of the Johnson farm in Kirtland.
Exactly. So what I did enjoy about this conference, and kind of what struck jumped out to me too, is, well, first of all, there was Elder Oaks's comment that they were gonna not announce any temples during this session.
Yeah, that was, I have to admit, I was disappointed for a minute.
Little
Just a
bit, yeah.
minute, but
But I think that I'm okay with it in the sense that I felt like just this, announcing of temples kind of grew to, proportions where it was no longer, a sacred and holy thing. It seemed to be, where the
Well, and
vets come out
it
and
outweighed the rest of the conference. So,
yes.
people would tune out until that last few minutes and then they'd go, oh, yeah, here we go,
And unfortunately, we did that at my house a few times. It's like, hey, kids, they're, doing the temples now. You can stop hitting each other and come watch conference.
He's breathing my air as
Yeah.
Elder Bednar used to say about their family home evenings.
Exactly. So I think that was an interesting thing. And I think it kind of also points to just the fact that, even though, we've lost President Nelson, the work is still going on, but they don't need to rush things either. So,
Yeah. Well, speaking of Elder Johnson,
yes.
he, one of the Elder Johnsons, gave a talk that was for me something that I've noticed some of the general authorities doing more often, and I'm very grateful when they do, talking about his personal experience as a young missionary wrestling with the issue of the priesthood restrictions. I mean, and so I Googled him because I wasn't too familiar with who he was and his background. And he's a convert to the church, joined in his when he's about four, he was a teenager, I believe. And he was home in Hawaii when he joined, but he was playing basketball at Dixie State. And as you guys know, until recently, I've been living in St. George for the last several decades. And so, but then before he joined the church, he was part of the Nation of Islam, which is, first of all, it's Muslim.
That's
Second of
right.
all, it is a very civil rights oriented group focusing on Black Americans. And so for him to come from there to our church, not know about the restrictions, find out about the restrictions as a missionary, and be very open and emotional about how he dealt with that and his struggle with that was for me an incredible view into the personality of someone who is a true disciple of Jesus Christ and has he has shared with us an experience of how to overcome some of our own challenges. Another example is President Oaks, and maybe Kevin, you were able to see the funeral today, which I wasn't. My wife mentioned something about President Oaks being more personal and more kind of loving in his talk today in the funeral. So maybe you can comment on that. But in listening to President Oaks, he talked about his grandfather kneeling beside him as a 7-year-old and being there for him when he lost his father, and how his whole family survived that. And it just showed, look, Elder Oaks, President Oaks has taken for years a lot of heat because of his stances on certain issues that people, for lack of a better word, want to criticize because of their political ramifications. And it's given a more vulnerable side of him that showed something there that I really appreciated that he did that, and I've never seen him do anything like that before.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, one of the lines that I remember from the talk is when he talked about his grandfather coming up to him and saying, I will be your father. You know,
Yeah.
to filling that spot, to just stepping into that place and saying, I'm gonna be your father, and his genuine appreciation for that. And you could still see, and he's 94 years old, but you could still see and hear in his voice the little boy who took comfort from that. And when he was grieving and with lots of doubts and uncertainty. So even after all this, what is for many people a whole lifetime, that he could still, retain that and share it. And so, yes, that is a distinct turn, I think, a difference in what he showed. That's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that way, but yes, you're right.
One of the things that has reminded me, and I think that, let me back up. We were talking about President Oaks taking a lot of heat from people just based on his style and the topics that he is prompted to talk about. I've heard some people say, oh, can't wait for the church, see how that turns out with Elder Oaks in there now, but it reminds me of President Benson when he was
Yes. Yeah. Same thing.
succeeding President
More so, I think, of
Kimball.
President Benson.
Yeah, very much so. He
His stances were
softened quite a
more.
bit about
Yeah.
things. And his focus was entirely different than what it was. He was very, very political before he became the prophet, and a lot of that slipped away, and he instead turned to the Book of Mormon and the pride.
Yes.
Yeah, but I also think that with President Nelson, my friendship with Bruce McConkie's son down in St. George, it was something that I have appreciated for many years. And in one of our discussions, I remember, in fact, more than once, he said that the member of the 12 who he thought could fill his father's shoes the best when it came to explaining the doctrine was Elder Oaks. And yet, if you look at it, Elder Oaks has hardly written anything. Elder McConkie was known for all of his works, and they're voluminous, and we rely on them. I admire him. I appreciate him. I don't, I've kind of grown into some other areas, but Elder Oaks, and it seems like his talk immediately went to something kind of like what you guys were just saying about President Benson, only this is going to be about the family.
Well, I think before he became a general authority, he wrote a very good and very important book called Carthage Conspiracy with
Oh,
Marvin Yap.
yeah.
And so he had this reputation as a scholar and as an academic before he became a general authority. And he's carried some of that as a general authority, just kind of an analytical, very rigorous kind of thought, where he's tries to look at things from all angles and give a very articulate and well-informed case on the topics that he wants to talk about. But yeah, then to see him just share that intimate family story from his childhood, and also his love and appreciation for President Nelson, and for the other apostles, where there's the sense that they see themselves as they're not as rivals or as kings or anything. They're in a brotherhood serving Christ, and they always recognize that when the mantle falls on them, and we've seen it with President Benson and others, when the mantle falls on them, they are the Lord's servants. They bring their own personality to it, but they're definitely on someone else's errand. And one of the things that characterizes these men especially is their loving kindness. You know, with President Monson, you know, that he became a bishop when he was like just in his early 20s,
24.
when he was 24, which is astonishing. And then that, and he's given this ward with all of these widows in it, and he conducted the funerals for every single one of them.
Yeah.
So just being aware of them and involved with them in that way. So it's fantastic to be a part of, and it's, you know, it's always a reminder to me in what conference that, you know, when we see that loving kindness and faith in Christ and just fulfilling our, you know, not only our callings, but our kindness to one another. You know, with this time when we've just had, you know, had the shooting at the church in Minnesota, and so what we hear is this, and we see in many, many different lives, from literally from all over the world now, with these elders and sisters, just stories of responding with kindness.
I think
Yeah.
that is one of the things that really makes me appreciative of my membership in the kingdom. And also, I think that, you know, maybe just one of our maybe least underused missionary tools is just general conference. I mean, it's so hard for me to watch any general conference without, you know, having my testimony expanded about, you know, the reality of you know, leadership in the church and how, you know, these men are called of God. The, you know, the way they carry themselves and, you know, their messages and their loving kindness for each other. It's such a strong testimony of who they, you know, testify of. You know, it's so easy to see, at least, you know, from my insider point of view in
Yeah.
the church, it's so easy for me to see that these are, you know, these are men called of God.
For me, it's like my favorite holiday is New Year's because I always love setting a goal. I mean, a realistic goal, not a fake goal. Usually it's some kind of a reading goal, occasionally a little bit of a writing goal. Most of the other more worldly goals I set go by the wayside pretty quickly. I think they did a study in the average New Year's resolution lasts like 10 days. But
Sounds right.
anyway, but conference for me is like New Year. At the end of every conference, I feel recharged and renewed, and I have a new desire to build the kingdom in whatever way that I'm currently involved in a better way than I did going into the conference. And I appreciate the fact that it is every 6 months. I kind of wish it was every Sunday, but that probably would dilute it to the point where it wouldn't be all that useful. But, you know, I could see the day when maybe we'd get an apostle to speak to us churchwide every week, pretty much. I mean, you know, maybe in the evenings or something, or a recording. I think the technology is improving, and I think the brethren are going to take advantage of that even more in their apostolic calling. I mean, Kevin, you mentioned in your lifetime the church hit 1 million.
Yeah.
When President, was it President Nelson who was born? I think he said there were 600,000 members.
Well, it's been an astonishing. Well, like, I think when I went on my mission, there were like 13,000 missionaries. That was in 73 to 75,
Yeah,
and
see, and
less than 8,000.
18,000 when I went because President Kimball in the interim had said
Yeah.
every young man should serve a mission.
Yeah. So just the astonishing growth and the way that it's growing in such a notable way internationally and then
Yeah.
across culturally, that there's something about the gospel that reaches to people that are so far away from you
I
know, what Utah Mormonism was, that it's just breathtaking. But yet we can just immediately feel this kinship as brothers and sisters in the gospel.
Well, the Joseph Smith story is kind of American, but on the other hand, why is it translating to the middle of Africa the way it is? I don't get it. It
Well, there's also something profoundly biblical about it, because it is, the way that Joseph Smith's call comes is it's really follows a pattern that's there,
Yeah.
and that's and it's like the little details, like all of Joseph Smith's visits with Moroni, and it, from the first vision all the way up to the recovery of the Book of Mormon and the organization of the church, all happened on specific Jewish holy days that were symbolic of exactly what was going on at the time. So there's
Yeah.
this there's these things where people just start looking. And I just saw a thing on one of the boards I frequent, Mormon Dialogue and Discussion, and a new poster came in and reported being a convert, and he's posting all of these highly technical information about how the restoration includes all of these things from early Christianity, early Jewish writings that that are there, that he can compare with the restoration scriptures, with these ancient things, and you can tell that he's been profoundly influenced by it and has it at his fingertips to share in a way that I wish I could. So it's this kind of wonderful growth process that we all get to see and want to be. I hope we all want to be a part of and help each other in all our separate wards and branches and families, and when we get together to a large gathering, to just look around and see, yeah, we're part of something that is much larger than ourselves. And we go to the temple, that size also crosses generations into the past, and we can see that, yeah, there's going to be a future for this.
I think also you talked about near-death experiences in our last hour. I think that looking at the first vision, there are some similarities between the Joseph Smith vision and the near-death experiences. And I think that is perhaps something else that translates across different cultures. That's not something that's uniquely American.
And then people kind of can feel and see that and find a place for it. I knew a guy who joined the church in California, who just he said he remembered he'd been growing his own marijuana. And I was thinking, with his kids growing up, thinking, man, I got to do something about my life. I think I should find a church. What church? And he just remembered in his mind seeing this huge, huge letter that said, visitors welcome, that in his mind were these huge letters. And when he got to the church, they're kind of small, but in his mind, they were huge. And he came in, and shortly thereafter, he heard me, talking about what I'd been writing about. And then he'd had an experience like 20 years before and had never talked about it with anybody. But in our community, he could. So after I talked about it, the next week he talked about it in Princeton meeting, and then the next Fast Sunday he told the story to the whole congregation. So it's just a place where someone who's had this kind of experience realizes, here's a community that understands, and it's because of the example of Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and the whole history and our scriptures, the Book of Mormon and the Doctrine and Covenants and the Pearl of Great Price, that it And then the way that our culture is really, there's a lot of LDS NDE books. Because, yeah, we accept, yeah, people can have vision. Sure, why not? Is there a problem?
Yeah. Well, I thought we'd just take a couple of minutes now. We are, as I mentioned, recording the day of President Nelson's funeral. We haven't seen, or we don't know when there's going to be a press conference announcing the reorganization. I kind of expect it to be Thursday or Friday, October 9th or 10th, but we will have to see. I thought we'd just take a minute and talk about President Nelson's effect on us personally and perhaps one of the influences he had on the church. And I thought I would talk about that first, and it really tracks with what we've just been saying about General Conference. My feeling about seeing President Nelson work with the 12 in particular, I believe that during his presidency, the 12 and the first presidency became more unified than I have ever seen them in terms of everything that they do. And I don't know if it's because, well, maybe there's some, and maybe there's some reasons for things that happened that would cause them to be more involved, but I also think it's a direct result of President Nelson's prophetic leadership in terms of including them. I mean, the 12 now dedicate temples, lots and lots of temples. The 12 are doing a lot of things that for a long time were only reserved to the first presidency. And I believe that they just work together so well that that was one of the things that stood out to me in this last conference was, yes, President Nelson has gone, but the other 14 are so unified. It was obvious that they didn't really miss a beat in terms of meeting their responsibilities. And then one of the things he really emphasized, and it was fairly early in his presidency, I remember, he asked us to go on a social media 7 days where we talked all about what we're grateful for. And that stood out to me so much that I really appreciated that going through that process in my life. And he's asked us to do a lot of things, and they've all benefited my life to the degree that I've done them. And, you know, I mean, you could go on and on with all of his accomplishments with the church as well. But those are two that really stood out to me. I mean, before I was involved with interpreter radio, I did talk radio for 30 years. I still do my book review show, but before I was also a political host, and took calls, and you know, we kind of had some fun. But sometimes when you're in that position, you're taking a more aggressive stance or a more aggressive position with people in terms of their arguments or things that are happening, in part because it's entertainment, in part because that's just the nature of the field that you're choosing. And it got away from being a little bit of peacemaker that President Nelson and the brethren have been encouraging us to do. And so that was another influence for me, is to kind of help me dial back some of my tendencies to be more aggressive in terms of how I present on social media and in other places. And so that's had a big impact on my life. Mark?
Yeah, one of the things that I think I'll always remember President Nelson for was his ability to just make gospel messages accessible. You know, right after he became, the prophet, he told us to think celestial. And there's been so many of these unique ways of looking at the gospel, and it just shows his really deep understanding of, the ins and outs of discipleship, and it presents, himself as a man who's really thought about, the gospel in human and practical ways, and how he can present it to a worldwide church and make it something that, people can embrace a little more fully, and even if it is just a magnet you put on your fridge, it's because of him, it's still a start. It's just him introducing all these gospel truths to us in so many unique ways. I feel that, that's probably where what I'll remember most about him is just the way he represented the gospel and, how accessible it is to everyone. I was quite impressed by that.
Well, I was very impressed with the conference before COVID hit when he told us that the next conference was going to be very different. He'd already been making several changes in church organization, and then we saw why. And so there's that sense where, yeah, this is a prophet being inspired to do something that we needed, and we didn't know that we'd need it until we got it. And also, just later, one of the last things that my mom was reading before she died was President Nelson's book, Heart of the Matter. So when I was staying at her house visiting, I read the book and found it was very touching. And there's like one of the thoughts was, there's life lessons, just a short book, but profound, not shallow. It's a fairly short book, but it's profound. It's quite literally from the wisdom tradition, as though, the wisdom of someone who's lived a long productive life, and because he'd been a heart surgeon, and that's his title. But then, just talking about when he'd do surgery, always have the end in mind from the beginning. That you don't just act randomly, but you act with purpose and act with the idea that you want something specific to be happening. And so all of your actions in between are focused on that end goal and illuminated by it. And I found that to be very helpful and profound.
Well, thank you, brothers. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to getting together with you in a month. Maybe by then we'll be out of the interregnum. Mark, your assignment is to learn how to spell it between now and then.
Okay, it starts with an E, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. We want to thank you for being with us for this episode of the Interpreter Foundation. We may be a little light-hearted with each other at times, but we do take what we talk about very seriously. We are grateful, all of us, for our opportunity to participate with the foundation, particularly in a volunteer status. It is my favorite thing that I do, and I appreciate our opportunities to build the kingdom in ways that will hopefully benefit you, the listener. And we hope you continue to listen. This is Terry Hutchinson signing off for Mark Johnson and Kevin Christensen. Thanks for being with us for this episode. Join us again.